What a busy week for Indiana and U.S. agriculture. We're ready to run through it all on Hoosier Ag this week. I'm farm broadcaster Eric Pfeiffer from Hoosier Ag Today. Farm Bureau held their annual convention this week in San Antonio. We'll have reports from Texas, including one Indiana ag tech company that won big. With one-party control out in Washington, D.C., getting a farm bill passed this year should be easy peasy, right? Well, as legendary college football analyst Lee Corso would say,
not so fast, my friends.
We'll have that coming up. Agriculture is a hot topic at the State House during this budget year. Governor Braun even mentioned it during his State of the State address. That story's on the way. And we'll get the Indiana Farm Forecast from Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin. And Andy Eubank will look at a volatile week in the grain markets. We begin with another round of highly pathogenic avian influenza hitting Indiana poultry operations this past week, including a rather large one in Jackson County. Roseacre Farms confirmed to Hoosier Ag Today that their egg production facility near Cortland, approximately 6 miles from Seymour, tested positive last weekend, impacting 2.8 million birds, the largest flock size to be impacted in Indiana. Given the rising cost of eggs and the size of Roseacre Farms, this particular story made national headlines. And there's been a lot of misinformation out there on social media, including comments made on our social media when it comes to bird flu. CJ Miller has more.
Our poultry and egg supply remains safe.
And that's Becky Yonascon, president of the Indiana State Poultry Association. Even though at least 6 commercial poultry farms across Indiana have had a positive test for the virus since the beginning of the year, state health officials stress that eggs and poultry products that are currently on the grocery store shelves are still safe for you and your family to eat.
We have safeguards that are in place. We have testing 24/7, 365 days a year to detect health concerns so people can be confident in their food supply.
She says a national poultry testing program was started nearly 100 years ago to keep a different disease called Pylorum typhoid from spreading.
The National Poultry Improvement Plan started in the 1930s, partially by a Hoosier, actually. And over time, diseases that we test for and the protocols and just test methods have evolved. But the poultry industry is very engaged with and dedicated to doing all testing necessary to detect and control any disease.
As a poultry production facility receives a positive test for the virus, federal and state health officials work to depopulate and disinfect the premises before restocking of the flock can take place. That has recently caused a strain on egg and poultry supplies, leading to an increase in prices.
Prices and availability of product, it's really a simple supply and demand equation. We have had a good number of avian influenza incidents and lost parts of our flock, and so there is just less product out there to sell. So that's really where you're seeing the higher prices come. Hopefully, as that supply increases again, we'll see easing up in prices.
Indiana's poultry industry employs nearly 13,000 Hoosiers and contributes more than $18.3 million in total economic activity to the state. I'm CJ Miller.
Thank you, CJ. Switching gears now, as I mentioned off the top, agriculture is a hot topic at the Indiana State House this year. And in his first State of the State address on Wednesday evening, Governor Mike Braun addressed the needs of farmers and agriculture. One of those needs.
Let's address our aging ag workforce with a tax credit for retiring farmers passing their farms on to the next generation. They need that help.
Legislation to do just that was introduced in the Indiana House by District 16 Representative and Jasper County farmer Kendall Culp in HB 1191. This bill allows a total tax credit of $67,000 off your Indiana income tax if you were to max it out by partnering with a young and beginning farmer. Culp says that is defined in the bill.
It's a farmer that has farmed for less than 10 years or has filed a Schedule F for less than 10 years. And so there's limitations on how old that farmer can be. And the retiring farmer has to be at least 60 years old to be able to take advantage of that.
Culp says his bill might lose its individual identity, which he's fine with because Governor Braun has included this language and the funding for it in his budget. So if the budget bill passes, then so does this. He provides more details from the bill.
So if you sell or lease your farm to a young beginning farmer, you're eligible for this tax credit. If it's a cash rent arrangement, you get so many dollars or percentage of the cash rent as the credit. If it's a grain share, crop share, then you get a percentage of the price of that crop to go for that. If it's strictly a livestock operation, then you get so many dollars per head of, if it's swine, for example, a swine produced, all counts towards that $67,000 maximum.
If you're interested in learning more about this bill, you can tune into the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast. Culp was kind enough to sit down with me for about an hour to discuss this bill and many of the other 14 agriculture-related bills he's helped author this session. You can find that podcast now at HoosierAgToday.com or in the free HAT mobile app. We'll have more farm news coming up here on Hoosier Ag this week. Let's turn our attention now to the markets. It's been a pretty volatile week. For more on that, let's turn it over to Andy Eubank.
Thanks, Eric. Yes, volatile and back and forth, seemingly, from one day to the next. It was lower on Friday. Settlements coming up. We'll begin with market analysis. For that, I spoke in the middle of the session with Brian Basting of Advanced Trading. Markets mostly lower most of the Friday session. Beans were higher and then started to move lower towards the close. So an up and down week as we go into the month of February, Brian.
Well, thanks for having me, Andy. Up and down sure is a good summary again this week, because we've approached some levels in corn futures, Andy, we haven't seen since Memorial Day last year, when corn, nearby corn futures, anyhow, with March futures this week at $5 a bushel, just smidgen below that. I think up like $4.94 this week. So a lot of support there coming from ongoing strength in export demand. We had another good week of export sales of corn, over 50 million bushel, reported by the USDA on Thursday. And we're in the middle of corn pollination, Andy, in Argentina, and it's mixed forecast. It's been warm and dry, but now they're calling for the week of February 3rd through February 10th or so to be wetter, anywhere from 1 to 2.5 inches. So as we all know, in the Midwest here, get into mid-July, those forecasts can make or break a pollinating corn crop. So a lot of uncertainty there, up and down. Then we add in the variable, Andy, of the tariff issue that may or may not occur here. President Trump has talked about imposing tariffs up to 25% on Canada and Mexico. And of course, that would potentially have some impact there also in the ag products. For example, Mexico is the largest importer of U.S. corn this year by far. So just something to keep in mind. I guess that what I'd summarize it, Andy, is it's a recipe for volatility, and we are seeing that. But I think from a producer side, it's still a recipe for opportunity. Strongly encourage your listeners to be disciplined in your marketing, avoid price prediction, keep a floor underneath these bushels, but leave the upside open. There's a lot of potential both ways, to the downside and the upside. I'd add, Andy, particularly since the commodity funds are holding a very large long position in corn at the moment.
You said avoid price prediction. Isn't it rather hard to do that?
It is, but in marketing, Andy, I think everyone has an opinion. It's only human nature, but opinions in marketing get in the way of success. And by that, I mean you set a target, and if the market doesn't get to that target, what are you going to do?
Market commentary from Brian Basting of Advanced Trading. Brian's number 309-664-2314. On the HAT Friday Farm Market Review, 8.25 down on March corn. It ended the month at 482. May 493, 8.5 cents lower. In July, 7.5 down at 496.75. Over in beans, mostly gains through the session, but then a late sell-off. Down 2 cents on the March, 10.42. May, 10.57.5 down 2.25. And July down 2.25, 10.72.25. And Chicago wheat lower, March, 5.59.5 down 7 cents. May down almost 7, going to 5.72.25. Meats quiet and mixed. February live cattle up 12, 204.60, up 80 cents on the April, and February lean hogs down 20 cents, 84.72. April 90.35, down $1.57. That's the Friday market recap. Much more still to come on the weekend show. I'm Andy Eubank. This is Hoosier Ag This Week.
It's too good to be kept a secret. The Hoosier Ag Today email newsletter. Every weekday morning, it gives you the latest news that's important to Indiana agriculture, plus a review of the farm markets and a customized weather forecast that's just for Indiana. It's free. It's in your email box every morning. Tell your friends, tell your neighbors, tell your employees to sign up for the Hoosier Ag Today email newsletter at HoosierAgToday.com and the Hoosier Ag Today mobile app.
Overall, we see milder temperatures continuing to hold through the first part of this week, but I think some changes are coming to the Hoosier State. I'm Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin with Hoosier Ag Today's Weekend Weather Outlook. Let's take a look at what's going on here across the Hoosier State. We had a little moisture come through to finish the week, and you know what? Anytime you talk rain in January and not snow, it's not a bad set of temperature conditions, right? Over the weekend here, I don't think we see a lot of additional rain, but I also think that we are going to be seeing some major changes to our temperature profile as we go forward. Let's talk through it here. For Saturday, mostly sunny. Well, all right, partly sunny and a little bit cooler. We're not looking at too much of a bad setup here. And temperatures, I'd call them seasonal to a little bit above normal. A better surge of warmer air coming back, mild for everybody as we move through Sunday. But Sunday, tomorrow, we do have a system trying to move through the Great Lakes region, which may throw a little bit of cloud cover into parts of northern Indiana and generally keep us from running away to the upside on mild temperatures in that part of the state. But good weekend overall here, all things considered. You get into Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday, and this is a very interesting scenario. You've definitely got cold air pooling to the north. Arctic air wants to break free and come south. You've got plenty of warm air down south. It doesn't really want to go anywhere either, so you end up with a zonal flow just west to east across the country. The cold air doesn't want to move south, warm air doesn't want to move north, and we're just kind of stuck with the same stuff for 3 days. I don't complain here, but I do think we see a little bit of cloud cover come out of this for later Tuesday night into Wednesday. Not a lot of precipitation, but it is a sign that things may be trying to change. The change comes with a final surge of very warm air for Thursday into early Friday, and there will be some moisture with that. I think rain across the Hoosier State ends up with 80 to 90% coverage, a tenth to three quarters of an inch easily. 1 inch or more can happen if thunderstorms come together. It's kind of been up in the air as to whether or not we get some early February thunderstorms, but we'll watch it for you. In any case, that is the system that then kind of breaks that zonal flow pattern, that west to east, and allows cold air to come south, and boy, howdy, it does. Cooler air coming in to finish the week Friday into Saturday. We may see another round of precipitation, rain, and wet snow for Saturday into early Sunday as the cold air, warm air battle rolls on. But then for the week of the 10th, we see Arctic air right here. Arctic high pressure sits over the top of us for most of the week. The active precipitation track sets up a little bit farther south over Tennessee and the deep south, and we are just chilly all the way through the 13th. Valentine's Day, the 14th, we start to see warm air come out of the southwestern U.S. An upper level ridge tries to form, but as it forms, we're going to be seeing precipitation come together, so I'm looking for it to be soggy in the days after Valentine's Day as well. I'm Ryan Martin.
MicroEssentials S10 from the Mosaic Company delivers uniform nutrient distribution. Every single granule contains nitrogen, phosphorus, and sulfur. MicroEssentials has superior nutrient distribution when compared to MAP or DAP blends. This means your crop does not have to search for those nutrients, improving nutrient uptake. Choose a superior phosphorus fertilizer with MicroEssentials. Contact your local ag retailer to learn more.
Welcome back to Hoosier Ag This Week. I'm CJ Miller with Hoosier Ag Today, and it's my turn to control this portion of Hoosier Ag This Week. And speaking of control, since Republicans are now in control of the House, the Senate, and the White House, you'd think that getting a new farm bill across the finish line this year should be a piece of cake, right? Well, as Eric Pfeiffer reports, that might not be the case.
Joe Dagger, head of public affairs for Farm Credit Mid-America, told a crowded room Wednesday night in Lafayette during an Ag Outlook seminar they hosted with Halderman Real Estate that bipartisan support is still needed.
And the challenge it's facing in 2025 is that there's a little bit of uncertainty as to how the budget reconciliation negotiations are going to impact the agriculture committees and what cuts they may have to make. And if those cuts are coming out of the farm bill, that's going to complicate how the farm bill process comes together.
Another complication facing farm bill passage.
Since the last farm bill was passed, nearly 60% of Congress has never voted on a farm bill. And that's an incredible amount of people when you think about the education and the breadth of a farm bill and ag policy. And there are very few opportunities for members of Congress to vote on agriculture policy outside of a farm bill. And so as a community, we're going to have to advocate for our causes and make sure folks understand the importance of what it means for rural America, for agriculture, and also for those who rely on the nutrition program.
317 members of Congress have not voted previously on a farm bill. Dagger says the House will likely act first on a new farm bill, but it's not going to be as simple as just reintroducing last year's proposals.
Because of this budget reconciliation legation that's going to potentially instruct the House and Senate Agriculture Committees to trim some programs down, which will potentially complicate the negotiations. So it's in flux in terms of when it's going to happen, but both have goals to meet in the first half of the year.
Farm Credit Mid-America will be in Louisville at the National Farm Machinery Show February 12th through the 15th. In booth 5207 in the East Hall. Be sure to stop by for more information. I'm Eric Pfeiffer.
Well, the ag industry was one of the hot topics discussed this past week during Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s first Senate confirmation hearing.
We need to fix our food supply.
And that was Kennedy speaking before the Senate Finance Committee on Wednesday. Kennedy, who is President Trump's nominee to lead the Department of Health and Human Services, said he is not the enemy of food producers.
American farms are the bedrock of our culture, of our politics, of our national security. I was a 4-H kid, and I spent my summer working on ranches. I went to work with our farmers. I want to work with our farmers and food producers to remove burdensome regulations and unleash American ingenuity. MAHA simply cannot succeed without a partnership, a full partnership of American farmers.
But when questioned by Senator Roger Marshall of Kansas, Kennedy pointed the finger at the broad range of crop protection products that are currently being used.
We're also destroying our soil because some of the chemicals that farmers use destroy the microbiome, and that causes the erosion of the soil. You can't get water infiltration. Agronomists now estimate that we only have, if we continue doing these processes, only 60 harvests left before our soil is gone. So farmers are using seeds and chemicals that are, over the long term, are costing them and us.
Kennedy also says he wants to fast-track additional incentives to farmers to steer away from the use of chemicals as crop protection products.
We offer and incentivize transitions to regenerative agriculture, to no-till agriculture, and to less chemically intensive. And by the way, I've also met with the chemical industry and the fertilizer and herbicide companies, and they want to do the same thing. Oh, and I think we're on the trajectory to do that, and we need to incentivize initiatives to accelerate that trajectory.
Read more about Kennedy's confirmation hearing before the Senate Finance Committee at HoosierAgToday.com. And a top prize of $100,000 is what the folks from a brand new ag tech company called Grip have brought back home to Indiana after they won the first place prize in the Ag Innovation Challenge presented by American Farm Bureau Federation during their annual convention this past week in San Antonio. Tracy Wiedmeyer is the co-founder and CEO of Grip, and he says that Farm Bureau has been instrumental in supporting their new company.
The awareness that they've brought to Grip, I mean, they've introduced us to some wonderful people across ag, farmers, industry experts, just a ton of confidence in terms of what we're solving exists everywhere in ag. We're so grateful to be part of that program. And Farm Bureau is just bringing it to folks that need this solution in every state, and that makes all the difference for us.
How can Grip help farmers?
We provide operational record keeping and communication tools for farmers. So we allow them to track anything important to their operation that they can put a QR code on, a sticker, a magnet, a zip-tied PVC card. Tracking isn't necessarily unique. The thing we've added that's novel for Grip is the ability for your team to have communications around that thing.
Wiedmeyer adds that the Grip system also offers a number of additional benefits, including Language translation.
The benefits on the tracking side are there's very little software used to alert folks when to fix something or what the service intervals are. And so the simple part is being able to remind folks of when things need to be maintained or things that need to be fixed perhaps after the harvest season. They've got a lot of Spanish speakers, a lot of agriculture does, so we automatically translate Spanish to English back and forth.
Read more about GRIP at HoosierAgToday.com. Well, speaking of Farm Bureau's convention this past week in San Antonio, farm labor, sustainable aviation fuel, and the trade agreement between the U.S., Mexico, and Canada were among their top policy priorities. Eric Pfeiffer has more on that straight ahead. Plus, Indiana Governor Mike Braun will be the featured guest at the big Shelby County Ag Promotion Banquet that's coming up in Shelbyville in early March. No doubt you'll want to be a part of that event coming up. You'll hear details and so much more, so don't you dare go anywhere. I'm CJ Miller with Hoosier Ag Today, and you're listening to Hoosier Ag This Week.
Ag Bioscience, the number one ag tech podcast globally, is now available on video. Hear the latest from innovators in food, animal health, plant science, ag tech, and agriculture.
What was it like, college student working at a giant company focused in a greenhouse?
I was immediately like taken aback. I didn't realize like how many people it does take to keep an agriculture business running, especially one the size of Corteva. And my experience at Corteva was amazing. I really fell in love with the company culture and the people who work there. I'm not sure if it's a Corteva thing or if it's a Puerto Rican thing, but everyone was so willing to help me. And it was incredible. It didn't matter what level they were, if they were my manager's manager, if they were just working in the greenhouse beside me, they were willing to help me with my Spanish, with the crops I was working on, with identifying insects. You know, the list goes on, but it was an amazing time and an awesome experience.
Get more episodes online at agrinovisindiana.com. Click on podcasts. Also available wherever you listen to podcasts.
You are listening to Hoosier Ag This Week from Hoosier Ag Today. Thanks for joining us. I'm Eric Pfeiffer. Glad to have you along. The Purdue Extension Farm Stress Team will be holding winter workshops around the state over the next several weeks to discuss mental health.
All of these meetings will feature agronomic speakers, PARP credits, and a meal, all for no charge, thanks to the Indiana Corn Marketing Council and Indiana Soybean Alliance.
That's Abby Heidenreich with the Purdue Extension Farm Stress Team, who says when people hear mental health discussion, they immediately think of sitting in a circle, holding hands, and singing Kumbaya. And that's not what's happening here.
So what we will be doing is just discussing the basics and the science behind mental health, how your mental health affects your body, how it affects the work that you do, and your bottom line as a business. So there's a lot of really great information. It's not going to be a therapy session. It's more just like all the agronomy topics. It's information for you to make decisions for your farming operation.
And Heidenreich says, make no mistake, if your mind and body are not performing at peak levels due to stress, your farm operation will see the impacts of that.
Whether that comes from loss of focus, inability to make solid, sound decisions, increase in farm accidents, and, you know, just overall ability to handle the stress load that comes with running a farm.
Upcoming workshops will be February 4th in Jackson County, February 24th in Gibson County, and March 13th in Boone County. For more information and RSVP details, you can find the flyer at extension.purdue.edu/farmstress, or you can find this story at HoosierAgToday.com. Late last year, Hoosier Ag Today told you that cattle imports from Mexico were suspended because of a very dangerous pest called the New World Screwworm. CJ Miller has an update.
We have worked with Mexico to come up with a new protocol to allow us to begin importation of cattle out of Mexico.
And that's Dr. Burke Healy with USDA's Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service. He says the situation involving the New World screwworm is improving.
While Mexico's situation with the screwworm is contained into the Yucatan region of southern Mexico, this policy will allow us to continue to have cattle trade, even if that fly should move farther north. So we're happy about that. And we've done some inspections and expect that we'll be able to start moving cattle in the next few weeks.
He says USDA is taking steps to battle the screwworm across Mexico and Central America.
So we are looking at trying to increase our fly production capacity. Our main technique to control the screwworm is through a sterile fly technique where we sterilize male flies, release them so that when they mate with a female who only mates once in her life, that she'll lay sterile eggs. We are at production capacity in the existing facility in Panama that USDA collaborates with. So we're bringing those flies out of Panama into Mexico and Guatemala and Nicaragua and trying to maintain a barrier. But we are going to need more fly production if this continues and to really get an eradication program. We're working with Mexico and Nicaragua to increase that production.
In December, USDA announced they were providing $165 million in Emergency Commodity Credit Corporation funding to protect U.S. livestock from New World screwworm. Read more at HoosierAgToday.com. I'm C.J. Miller.
Thank you, C.J. Farm Bureau's policy book is all set for the new year. Farm Bureau delegates took care of that this past week at their annual convention in San Antonio, Texas. Farm Bureau President Zippy Duvall.
Our delegates, they reaffirmed our support to utilize domestic feedstock for sustainable aviation fuel and expanding the potential use of it. Labor was another hot topic, especially stabilizing wage rates in order to avoid drastic changes to pay rates year over year. And another key takeaway was on the U.S.-Mexican-Canada agreement, with delegates voting to support the USMCA review process to encourage new opportunities while protecting U.S. agriculture.
And Duvall says a key aspect to Farm Bureau policy is that the process starts at the local level.
And they raise on up to the state level, and then they're discussed at the national level. We had almost 350 farmers and ranchers delegates from across the country voting today. We once again surveyed our delegates, and 97% of them are from family farms. So we really do represent the diversity of agriculture.
Recapping their convention week, Duvall said the week in San Antonio was fantastic.
We had almost 5,000 attendees here, and their energy was great all week long. We also had more than 80 speakers here sharing their knowledge and experience with our attendees.
And Duvall encourages you to mark your calendars now for next year's event in Anaheim, California, January 9th through the 14th. For more info, visit fb.org. And while you have your calendars out, turn to just next month, March 5th at the Horseshoe Indianapolis in Shelbyville, for the 20th annual Taste of Shelby County Agriculture Banquet and Fundraiser. Indiana Governor Mike Braun will be the featured guest. Our C.J. Miller will be the master of ceremonies. He'll also be joined by Lieutenant Governor and Secretary of Agriculture Micah Beckwith. Mitch Frazier from AgriNovus will be there. He'll be doing the fireside chat with Governor Braun. And Dr. Brett Marsh, the former state veterinarian, who's now the dean of the Purdue University College of Veterinary Medicine, he'll be there as well. Get your tickets now. You can find this story at HoosierAgToday.com to get those. Again, that's March 5th in Shelby County. We'd love to see you there. That does it for this edition of Hoosier Ag This Week. We'll do it again next weekend. Same hat time, same hat channel. I'm Eric Pfeiffer, Hoosier Ag Today, Indiana's Farm Network.